Welcome to The Problem, a Lockwood & Co. podcast. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Alan.
And today we are finally discussing part one of book three, The Hollow Boy.
Part one is Lavender Lodge.
Oh yeah, I do usually say what it's called, don't I? It's interesting though, I didn't take many notes in this section because I just felt like we were on an adventure, so.
I feel like part one is such a nice little self-contained three-act story.
Yeah.
Like, it's also really sophisticated because it's like a microcosm of the whole book. It's also like very bittersweet. And I think Stroud does like a really cool thing here where he's changing the tone that Lucy's had for the previous two books.
I also just think he wanted to show them, like, here's them as a good team before we fuck it all up.
Yep. One last show.
So chapter one, Lockwood & Co. begin investigating Lavender Lodge.
The chapter one art here is a door that says vaccines on it. And probably some doctors in there. You can see two doctors.
Definitely doctors. I just wrote down that it's the door to the inn.
Yeah.
Because it definitely says vacancies.
Vacancies.
And then we get our, like, introduction from Lucy here.
I find a lot of this to be, like, really bittersweet, her tone.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because I feel like in these couple chapters, more than any other chapters so far, definitely, but even ones that I remember in the future, this sounds like an adult Lucy looking back on it.
Yeah. I asked you this the way back when we started doing the books about, like, Lucy's voice and where, because it's a first-person narrative and, like, English major training is to be like, locate where the voice is coming from in time. So is this like happening in real time for her? Is she like, is it her diary each night or is it like 30 years later? And this feels later to me than the other two books. This is her, like, at least everything that happens in this book, she's like looking back on it. It's not just happening right now, it feels like.
Yeah, definitely. That is how this feels. And so her voice is filled with dread, almost.
Yeah, and like a sadness. It's just, it's really interesting. Like, there's a real irony here, especially if you've read the book. And by the way, you probably should read the whole book before you listen to us talk about it, because we're going to talk about it in a way where we don't, where you know the ending. So,
yeah. Absolutely. I wrote down that it feels nostalgic here at the beginning. Like, she's looking back and thinking, ah, the good old days.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the good old days are getting set on fire and, like, like, that's how she starts out. Anthony Lockwood, coat aflame, arms flapping madly as he staggered backwards towards the open window. George Cubbins dangling from a ladder one-handed like an oversized windblown pear. So, like, these are the good times.
Bruised, Lucy Carlyle, bruised, bloody, and covered in cobwebs.
Yeah.
That's how I like to be. And then we have this very, like, voiceover in a movie moment where she's like, want to know how this happened? I'll show you.
And so 6 hours earlier, like, you could almost see it flash on the screen. Yeah.
So then with the 6 hours earlier, she gives us this bit where she's describing the time of year and the weather and all that. And it could not be more different than the sunny summer setting of the last book.
Yeah.
It's the storm-soaked November afternoon, shadows deepening. My favorite time of year, obviously. Gloomy and dark.
Yeah, me too, actually. I'm experiencing, like, I don't know if seasonal affectation disorder, is that what it's called? I don't know if that can include people who are like, oh my God, it's summer and I just want to die. But yeah, that's what I am.
Oh no, I feel that way too. I call it reverse seasonal depression.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, ugh, the sun comes up at 5 a.m. I will kill everyone.
I don't want to minimize people's experience of that disorder. I know that it's real, but like it does, like I feel sad when I know it's not going to snow anymore.
I will say
it's not cold.
Here it's April and this is fine. You know, it's warm outside, but my house is still quite cold.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fair.
Well, she says here that it's the time of year when the days were scarcely lighter than the nights and the dead began walking during the darkest afternoons. And yep. So that really is different than the previous book where she was talking about people stay out really, really late to just try and soak up being able to be out there in the midsummer like environment.
Yeah, it must be so much worse. Like for people who do suffer seasonal affect whatever disorder.
Yeah.
In the world of the problem.
Because more people die in the winter.
Well, more people die and like you can't go out.
Yeah.
You know, at least now you can, you know, you can go out and do things in the night. It just sucks because it gets dark at like 3. Even with, I think were I to live in this world, I don't think November would be my favorite time of year. Although that being said, I have entered this time in my life where I look back fondly upon lockdown. Mm-hmm. Where I didn't have to go anywhere or do anything or talk to anybody. So, you know, maybe I would still love it.
Maybe it would be even better.
Yeah. Anyways, then we find out that Skull is with them.
Yep. Skull is on the job too.
And already he's the best. Lockwood goes over their plan. They go in, you know, they're looking around. They're not trying to get in trouble here. They're just supposed to determine whether or not there's ghosts and then report back to the police. And then Skull is like, it's a useless plan. Stab them first. Ask questions later.
Yeah.
That's your only sensible option.
Because the scenario here is that people have been staying at this little hotel or whatever it is, a mom and pop hotel, and they check in, but they don't check out. Like, we don't know where these people are going. And the owners told DPRAC, like, who could say where these transient salespeople and sailors end up going after this? That's not our responsibility. So there's suspicions that there's either a haunting here or these people are serial killers or something.
Yeah. And the police went in and didn't notice anything. But as it says later, they're adults.
They're useless. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm jumping kind of a whole page here, but I love that bit because it's just like, you can feel the children reading this and being like, yeah, adults are useless. You know, like, it's great writing for kids.
It's so scary when I think about it. This was more in the second chapter when they actually get up there. But as an adult, it'd just be like, you know, you're coming into London. You need to stay the night there before you go to your next thing. And there's just no way for you to sense that this place is dangerous. And you're like, oh, seems great. And you throw your stuff down on the bed. You get ready to go to sleep. And then you just die. Like, it's terrifying to think of that.
Yep. And also, okay, I have this note later, but I guess this is the episode of jumping ahead. Like, how long have these people been getting away with this?
Mm-hmm.
Because they just talk about, you know, one or two people, I think they actually say 4 or 5 people missing recently. But like, these are an old couple who've owned the building for a while. And the amount of ghosts that we see, they've been doing this for a while and just nobody noticed that all these people were going missing.
But like, yeah, spoilers for this couple. They're psychotic, serial killing, terrible people on top of being adults.
So they knock and buzz on the door a bit. And as they're waiting for the couple to let them in, a ghost starts coming down the street toward them. And they do mention that it is 4 in the afternoon.
Yeah. So this thing is just like floating along. Lockwood's like, don't worry about it. It's fine. It's probably a shirt.
Yeah, it's probably somebody's laundry.
And George is like, what are you talking about? It has legs.
Yeah, it has limbs. It's so good. But I always wonder about this ghost in particular. It's like, what is its source? Where is it going? How far can it go? What?
Yeah, I don't understand what's happening.
It doesn't matter at all. It's a joke, but still.
I think it does. I mean, if you want to take it seriously, I think it does also point to like the bigger problem that we're going to find out about later in the book.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, just that there's so many ghosts happening right now. Yeah.
Yeah, the whole Chelsea area is like just brimming with supernatural activity. So it's not crazy to think that there's just free roaming phantasms going wherever they feel like right now. But there is like pressure to get in the door. Building.
Yeah.
And I think it's to make us, you know, as the reader who doesn't know anything, and maybe this is your first Lockwood and Co. book even, to be like, oh, we should get into the house. It's safe in there. There's grown-ups in there. It's a, you know, it's a hotel. And then little did you know, like out of the fire into the frying pan, or out of the frying pan into the fire, whatever, however that actually goes. I think I completely messed that up.
Out of the frying pan into the fire, I believe
yeah, it is. That's what happens.
Oh, and then also in amongst this, Lucy gives descriptions of her cohorts. And it is very much, you know, Lockwood is amazing and cool. His eyes sparkle.
Yeah.
And George is not that.
No. I like when she talks about the people when they finally answer the door.
Yep.
She's like, they were probably murderers, but we didn't want to startle them. So we put on our best smiles.
It's great. I love that line. I guess you wouldn't want to startle murderers, to be fair. Probably turn out poorly for you.
I feel like that's not how cops do it. I feel like they're assert your authority immediately. But they are in such a weird position. Like the adult authorities have already been here, and then I guess they sent children to be like, I don't know, double check it. Just see if you can find anything. Like, what do they think is happening here?
I guess the police couldn't find proof, so they need to send in children to find proof.
It's so weird.
It's weird, yeah. And then this is where we get like the description of to what's going on and why they're there. But we've already gone over that.
There is a great little description where she says, I don't know how old the man was. When I see someone older than 30, time sort of concertinas for me. But he was definitely closer to coffin than crib. And I love Lucy's voice so much. It's just.
Yeah, that's good. She describes them as being like short, round, and gray haired. Mm-hmm. And I just wrote down, I too am short, roundish, and gray haired. Not a murderer yet. No,
maybe one day.
Maybe one day I'll live out my dream.
This is where Skull starts to be like, just kill him. Just make it easy on yourself.
Yep.
You could get him right now. And she's like, no, no, be quiet. And this kind of stuff here was really what made me in the previous book be like, Skull is the psychological equivalent of Lucy's inner dark voice, blah, 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 blah. Because it's stuff like this that he just says the unspeakable things. And he's usually right.
And he's so funny. And I love him a lot.
He's great. I'm so glad they take him on stuff. Because like his little mystery and all that stuff is wrapped up. You could have just like never had him again.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's so good.
So they do some pretty typical questioning of the old people. You know, the old people are like, the police already asked us all of this.
Yeah.
So you should just leave. And then Lockwood very importantly holds out a warrant from DPRAC saying that Lockwood and Co. has the authority to look around and check for ghosts.
Yeah. And the old man like plays dumb. He's like, crime? Haunting? Like, what are you talking about?
There's nothing supernatural here. Look around. See the defenses that are only in this one room.
Right. You know, it's called Lavender Lodge because there's lots of fresh lavender all over the place and the room stinks of it. And there's iron stuff and, you know, it's well defended, like you said.
Yeah. And then very not suspiciously at all, when they say that they're going to go look around upstairs, the old man is like, why not leave your things? The stairs are narrow and it's a long way up. You don't need any of your ghost protection.
They just stare at him.
Yeah. So very innocent older couple here.
Yeah.
Though, I mean, honestly, if I'm like above 80 and I'm not, you know, murdering lodgers that come to stay at my house, I've done something wrong in my life.
Yeah, for real. What's the point of having an Airbnb if you're over 80, if you're not going to
just kill people off?
Yeah, you're just there. You're like, come on.
There's not. I want to be the creepy legend lady, you know, but I live in a suburb, so
don't go in that lady's house. No one ever comes back.
I mean, I do live in unit 13 here in my building. So there's that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I love that George's evidence is the dusty ketchup bottle.
But he's right that, you know, it's like a, I guess like a bed and breakfast. I don't know that they have that in England, or maybe they invented it. I have no idea. But nobody has breakfast. So like, that's an important detail.
And now, okay, Lucy here says they must know it's all over for them. If something bad happened to their guests up here, we're going to sense it. And I agree. And they're sending the agents up there to die, basically. But like, they still must know it's all over for them. Because if the police know that Lockwood & Co. is there.
I guess. I don't know. Like, they also have the weird, and it's not that weird. I think it's the right choice that Stroud is making here. Because, like I said, this could be the first Lockwood & Co. book that you pick up. But you know how, like, each time that you first meet adults in these books, they're like, I remember the days when children were children.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I could just mistreat them and they had no status. They do that same thing here. And I feel like they feel like they can get away with it. That these kids will disappear and they'll be like, what kids? No one ever came by. Agents die all the time. Who could say what happened to them, you know?
I guess. And then so that chapter one ends with the skull saying, brilliant, outwitted by a senior citizen. Outstanding. What a team. Oh, that's after the old people kind of lock them in upstairs.
Yeah, there's like a fire door with bolts on it. And the guy locks them in, which is fucking crazy. Like, I don't know. I would have waited until they were in there a little bit more, but he needs like the satisfaction of like, you'll die now, you stupid kids. It's like weird.
I love that Skull hates old people.
He does.
Because outwitted by a senior citizen. It's so correct for Skull to be like, old people are inferior.
And Lucy says it kind of had a point.
Yeah. Well, because Lucy also thinks old people are inferior.
Right. Then we move on to chapter two, where Lucy, George, Lockwood, and Skull are trapped in a cluster of ghosts on the second floor.
And the chapter art is one of the ghosts. All right, so the first chapter, or the first paragraph here, is Lucy describing herself. And there's something about it that sounds so begrudging that he's either like really into Lucy's voice or like his editor made him put this in. Well, I'm mostly joking, but like, because the whole thing is like, I suppose I'll tell you what I look like too.
I get you. Okay. That's true. She does say that. I didn't think of it that way. It also, I guess it felt to me like she was remembering like just the trauma of someone locking you in a room to die. And then she was like, let me step back from that mentally.
And she describes her hair as the color of a walnut coffin.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, nobody's ever described their hair that way before. So that's great. Love it.
That felt to me like in The Hobbit, where Bilbo is always talking about like food metaphors and like, because he's just obsessed with food and he's always hungry and wants to be cozy. It just felt like that, where she just lives in this world of death and ghosts. And she's like, yeah. It's, you know, a walnut coffin, you know.
You've seen a million. Thing. I've seen a million.
Yeah,
exactly. You know exactly what that color is. They discuss whether or not they should try breaking down the door, but decide there's no point in that. And then Lucy gives a quick list of their talents, being that Lockwood is good at sight. She's good at hearing or listening and touch. And George, he has all three and is mediocre at all three.
It's not exactly what he's there for. He's kind of the research guy.
No, so. But she definitely had to make him the butt of the joke.
For real, yeah.
Yeah.
No mention either of Skull's talents, whatever they may be.
Whatever they may be. Although, very quickly after that, Lockwood does say, what does your friend in the jar say? And Lucy's like, it's not my friend. And he's like, Skull, what's up? And he's like, there's ghosts here. Lots of them.
And then she's... I do think this is significant, though, because like I said, I feel like it's a kind of a microcosm of the larger mystery that we're going to get. So it's just kind of like a good foreshadowing where if you think about it, like this couple has a business here that they run for profit. And then they were like, you know, what would allow us to extract all the money from the guests is like using ghosts as a weapon. Mm. And then creating a cluster that gets bigger and bigger so that no one can ever escape and there's no evidence left behind. I just think it's like really good foreshadowing on Stroud's part to give us the mystery like this where we're like, where's the source? And meanwhile, there's like 500 ghosts down here. Like we're not worried about like, oh, we got to seal every little source. We need to find like the thing that's making all the rest of this happen.
Yeah. This is where I had my note about, you know, how long these people been murdering and how has no one noticed yet. But then, of course, I've listened to a lot of murder podcasts and that's what happens. No one ever notices, or at least police don't. So, yeah, they set up a safe zone there kind of in the middle with an iron circle. And they just sort of get themselves together and are like, we're professionals. We're going to do this.
And they do get pretty systematic about it. They start checking room to room and like limiting the ones that they can already see and stuff like that. So
while Lucy and George are sort of setting up the safe spot, Lockwood goes to investigate a room. And doesn't he come back and be like, oh, the color's terrible. And then they're like, no really ghost. Good. And he's like, oh, no, there was a ghost.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the decor in the bedroom, lilac green. And what can I can only describe as a kind of billowous off yellow. None of the colors went together at all. Like, that's what he's horrified by. There was another joke before that, too, where it's just loaded with jokes, even though we're like, and this is typical Stroud. It's like Buffy the Vampire Slayer or something, where we're upping the tension and like the we might get murdered at any second, but telling jokes the whole time. Skull is like, hey, you know, I used to cheer for you guys to die, but I don't do that anymore. We're cool now. And she's like, yeah, when it first started talking to me, we all viewed it with suspicion, irritation, and distaste. However, as the weeks passed, we'd gotten to know it properly. We learned to really despise it.
Yeah, no, that's good. It also is, it's almost like we're being reintroduced to Skull.
Yeah.
Because Skull is different after his whole plot line in book two is over.
He had to find a new purpose. He lost his masters, gone forever.
And his new purpose is badgering Lucy. So Lockwood sort of made safe the ghost in that room, just like cordoned it off with some salt and iron. And they sort of discuss how that's not like the ghost that's doing it. That's one of the victims, definitely. And then they go into the other rooms, find some more ghosts.
So they have certain missing people and they've seen pictures of them and stuff. And they find one of the people and they're like, he's definitely the missing guy. They don't know what killed him, but Skull is telling Lucy that there's a powerful spirit, a really bad one. Mm-hmm. And it's probably somewhere up higher in the place, because there's a third floor and then there's an attic space above that.
Yeah, it's really kind of creepy how he says it, because she's like, have you located the source of all this? And Skull is just like, somewhere above. But you knew that already.
Mm-hmm.
I love that line. I just love that Lucy was like pretending that she wasn't feeling the dread. And then Skull was like, you can feel it. It's like, it's just perfectly creepy. It's really good.
Oh, it's
good
great.
Tension builder sort of amongst the humor.
Like I said, how it feels to me like they're a part of each other. Like they're one thing.
And then George and Locke would have the stupidest conversation about what the old man is going to do to them. And it kind of ends with Lockwood talking about hanging up, you know, dried out thin corpses by a hanger, hanging them up in a closet and, or putting them in boxes, like folding them up in a wardrobe and stuff. And I'm like, I'm not making it up. This has happened.
It is interesting that like people can die from ghost touch and they just, I guess, become so dehydrated and desiccated that it's like when the guy picks the wrong grail in the Indiana Jones movie, he just turns into dust.
Yeah, that's what I was picturing also. Because the old man's threat was that they would come up in the morning and sweep them up.
Sweep them up, yeah. So that's probably a part of how they've been getting away with it too. Is they're not having to bury bodies, they're just putting them in the bin.
There's, I guess, three doors left, so they all pick a door and George goes immediately for the one that is obviously a closet. Love that. I would do the same, George.
That's really good. I guess that's their rule, right? Is you have to go in order, like the biscuit rule.
Yeah.
So he's manipulating the rule. Yeah.
It's really great. And then on the last room that Lockwood opens, there is a huge cluster of dozens of ghosts. And they quickly decide to climb up to the attic. And there's this great thing of Lockwood yelling at George to get the ladder. And George is like, what ladder? Do you want me to just pull it out of my pants? What are you talking about? It's like the one that was in the closet that you opened, you idiot.
This is also like Lockwood's like, you need a ladder thing coming back. I don't know. That's from the show, really. It's not really in the book. That whole thing is one of the most highlighted things in the Kindle edition where it says, good news was there weren't a couple of ghosts inside. No, the bad news was we couldn't count how many ghosts were inside. So,
and then I guess the ghosts kind of come spilling out to get them. So they get the ladder set up to the attic within an iron circle.
Yep.
And they scramble up top where all is well. There's nothing bad up there.
Yeah, it's just eternal darkness and biting cold. It's fine. I could almost see the shot in my head of like looking down from the attic space onto the ladder.
Yep.
With the iron circle and all the ghosts around. It's like so, that's so good.
It's very cinematic, these first couple chapters, definitely. Yeah.
He talks about like the ghost fog flowed across the carpet like boiling milk. He's just like, he's so evocative in his word choices and just stuff like that. I just really appreciated it when I was rereading. I was like, man, he's so good.
You can very vividly see everything that's happening.
Mm-hmm. At the very end, which I think is another great like ending paragraph. He's really good at this too. It says, this is where it stemmed from, the horror of the house. This is where we'd find the cause. We didn't hesitate. We scrambled up one after the other. We're swallowed by darkness. Or swallowed by the dark.
Yeah, sorry. That's good. Lockwood, chapter 3, Lockwood gets set on fire and knocked out a window. George triggers the changer and Lucy steals the source.
Did I write steals?
Oh, no, you said seals. That was me. That was me misreading.
She Unless put it in like, her pocket. Because she did that before. So it's not like she doesn't have a history of stealing the source. Right. It could have happened.
Unless you changed it in the brief second I looked down, which would be hilarious. And now you're gaslighting me.
No. I could barely I scrambled to open it to make sure I didn't do that.
The chapter art is just the creepy looking attic with the cobwebs.
We're very easily identifying everything in this book so far.
So far. We don't know what is to come though. So it's cold up there, which is not good, and there's lots of spiders and spider webs, which is also not good. Oh, there's something here I meant to Google before we started. Because what exactly is a tea chest?
I have no idea.
Me neither. I mean, the only thing I can find on Google are small chests that hold tea. But
a few broken tea chests lay in one corner. Otherwise, the room was empty. There was nothing there.
All I'm saying is I want a chest full of tea. You know, like a proper like steamer chest, that much tea in it.
Do you think this
smell would be amazing?
This could be like some kind of like pile of belongings of dead, you know, like not exactly luggage, but like the stuff where they would have kept, you know, things that were more valuable and they just chuck them up in the attic.
Maybe, but tea chest. I don't really know what they're going with that. So then Lucy gives us the lowdown about like how spiders are attracted to ghosts and supernatural stuff. And okay, this is my least favorite book in the series. Not to say I don't like it. I'm just saying, you know, when you rank things, there's got to be one at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the one at the bottom for me. And for a couple of different reasons, but largely it's because I feel like this is the one where Stroud forgets that women are just people and instead turns them into caricatures.
Okay.
Or like, maybe I'm not quite saying that right, but this is the one where I think his writing of women is the worst. And
I think I've seen other people say that too. So
there's one line here that it's nothing. It's a throwaway line, but it just, because I'm expecting the bad women writing here, I'm just like, why did you include this? There was no reason to write it like that. And it's when Lucy says, to be fair, I hadn't seen any, referring to the spiderwebs, in the guest rooms of Lavender Lodge, but then Mrs. Evans was probably pretty handy with her duster. Even though it was Mr. Evans who threatened to sweep them up later.
Oh, that's a good point.
And Lucy's just like, she has no reason to think that it's the woman who's not only doing the dusting, but she says it like the duster belongs to her, like nobody else would ever touch it.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that line. I hate it. I know it's nothing and it's not a big deal. But like the line could have said, we didn't see any rooms downstairs, but we know that they want to lure in guests, so they would keep them clean. It doesn't have to be a gendered thing at all. And we get it.
Yeah.
Anyways, I hate it.
I definitely noticed the line, but didn't notice the genderedness of it in the way that you're saying. I think that's a good point.
I don't know. Maybe I'm being unhinged, but whatever.
I think that's unfair. But is, you know, the typical behavior of women to be overcritical. I don't really mean that.
No, I know. And then we have a bit from Skull here after all this where he's just like, you oughtn't to be up here. Even I'm nervous and I'm already dead. It's like then, yeah.
All of his advice is good. He's like, the worst thing you can do is go up there and look. Just chuck magnesium flares and run away. There's another one of these really like 200 something highlighted lines of George's face was generally, sorry, let me start again. George's face generally expresses as much emotion as a bowl of custard. Is
that's
the line.
That's so mean.
I know.
Like, wow.
It didn't display overwhelming delight now. George is not happy because they make him, they see like, or I think Lucy sees there's something up in the rafters maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, who's going to go up there and check it out? And they volunteer George to do it because of the broom closet stunt that he pulled earlier.
Yep. Turned out poorly for him.
Yep.
And then this is where everything goes kind of crazy.
Yep.
In the best way.
It's great. I like that the ghost is like, maybe they won't notice me. But then once they get close, it reacts to them. So I like that it's strategic somehow.
Or like, because when the Evanses sent them up there, they said, you know, the ghost will be out at midnight or whatever. So maybe it generally doesn't do anything until midnight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Unless somebody comes up and pokes it.
Then tentacles just start streaming out of the body in the rafters.
And George throws a flare at it, which misses and sets Lockwood on fire.
Yeah, this is us catching up to the very beginning of the book now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like this in the TV show, this would be the scene where they're like, oh, okay, I see. We're back to where we started.
And then Lockwood calls for some water and Lucy's like, I've got some. And I need a sword. And then Lockwood's all water, Lucy. And Lucy's all George, your sword. And they have this slow motion, perfectly synchronized moment where Lucy's throwing the water bottle at Lockwood and George is throwing his sword to Lucy. And it's beautiful and it's wonderful. And then the slow motion stops and everything goes wrong because the water bottle goes smack into the middle of Lockwood's head and flings him out the open window. And the sword just scatters like yards past Lucy and she is still stuck in amongst the ghost. And Lockwood is maybe dead.
I think this is like the best joke of this book easily. Maybe the joke of the series. It's the best joke.
It's definitely like Stroud was, here's a lot of humor because there's not much humor in this book. Like,
that's
I'm sure
true.
There is, but like the book is kind of sad and depressing.
No, I think that's true. This like there's a lot of angst in this book, and this is the funniest stuff I think is up in the front.
Yeah,
that's true.
And Skull is of course like, is he dead? Yay! Oh no, he's hanging onto the shutters. Shame. Still, this is definitely the funniest thing I've ever seen. You three really are you three really are incompetence on a stick. But the water did get the fire out on Lockwood.
Well, he gets knocked outside where it's raining. So, like, he gets put out way. The and water then, bottle went out the window because it, like, hits him in the face and bounces off and goes out the window.
And then George is like, you can still get to this or do a cool somersault over the tentacles or something. Yeah. This is like, you do one. This is your fault.
She's got no weapons, no way to get to a weapon because the room is just filled with ectoplasmic tentacles now. And Skull is like, don't you have like a silver necklace or something that Lockwood gave you? And she's like, oh, yeah, I do still wear that.
You never take off and it's always there, you idiot.
Right. She wears it every day and mm-hmm. not just like special occasions. Not that it means anything.
No, it's not. No.
No.
Anyways, but she does use it to basically get to the ladder, right?
Yep. She starts like swinging it around and stuff, and the tentacles are scared of it, and she manages to get her weapon back.
And then this is where they really come together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Lockwood is the one with the sword, and he's flinging it around and keeping the tentacles at bay, and he gets to be the one to throw the seal towards Lucy. And he can throw, as she says. And then Lucy gets to seal the source, which is kind of her thing, you know, finding the source and sealing it.
Yep.
And honestly, I don't remember what George gets to do. He's also doing battle with the tentacles.
He's guarding Lockwood's back.
Yeah, and keeping the ladder safe, I guess, because
they're
both in that area there. Yeah.
And then once everything, like, gets knocked out, there's this really good moment, I think, that it, like, the contrast is so good that, like, it helps when I'm remembering the scene to be like, wow, that was so crazy and chaotic, everything that happened, because it just goes to utter, like, peacefulness and nothing is going on when she throws the seal over it. So it says, like, the net sank down, the fury winked out of my mind. All at once, there was a hole there, an echoing silence. The coils froze. A second later, they had faded from the attic like mist from a mountaintop. One moment there, the next gone. It's just really, really good stuff.
And then I think they all start laughing.
Yeah.
As like a tension release, as one does.
And this is like really their last thing that together of the just the three of them ever.
Yeah, that we see, because they talk about how busy they are and that sort of thing, but we never really get to go on a case with just the three of them again.
On one hand, I feel like it's what Lockwood & Co. is, but on the other hand, it's what Lockwood & Co. was and will never be again.
Yeah, a sort of farewell to youth.
Yeah, for real.
And Skull does, of course, berate them for doing such a terrible job.
It's like, oh, you're laughing? You think that was good? I'm ashamed to be faintly associated with Lockwood & Co.
Yeah. As though anybody knows who he is or cares.
They have no idea. He's the biggest secret in the world.
But then Lucy's like, but we weren't hopeless. We were good. We were the best. And we never fully realized it until it was too late.
That's so bittersweet. That's looking backwards. That, like you said, nostalgia.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. There's just the shift in the voice, the amount of irony that's there. That's just really interesting to me. Yeah, so, I mean, the best joke's got to be the water bottle
to the face, Lockwood out the window. Yeah, 100%. Though I do also love the, you know, the ladder in his trousers. That's good, too. A lot of laughs in this chapter.
There's that really good drawing on Twitter that Lavender Ghost Co. does
where
it's like Lockwood's face kind of cartoonishly warping around the water bottle as it hits him. His eyes are really big. It really is funny three chapters.
Yeah.
I felt like it's very punk rock to, even if someone is chasing you, to go into a house that you think they're murderers and be like, we're going to look around.
Yeah, I can see that. Sure. That, and also, like, well, that's not very punk rock. It's punk rock if he's lying, but I think he's telling the truth when he pulls out the warrant from Deeprec.
Oh, that would be really funny if it was just like...
If it was fake.
Yeah, some kind of like their Deeprec license.
Yeah. That was the energy it had because he was like, you can call them if you want.
And name drops Barnes and stuff. That's true. Yeah, I didn't think about that, but...
But I actually think he's telling the truth since they asked him to come check it out.
Yeah, and they wouldn't get paid otherwise.
Yeah, so. That's true. I meant to say this at the top. I ordered a new copy. Not new. I ordered a new used copy of The Hollow Boy from Amazon that was like half the price of a new copy. Why is it still like $50? Whatever. And the description of it was like new. And it arrived, and the only problem with it, it's very obviously been read before, but that's fine. The only other problem is there's like a small tear in the dust jacket that angers me when I look at it. But other than that, it's fine, and I can throw that library copy in the recycling. And some people might say donate it, but no, nobody wants that. We don't know how many people have touched it.
Even the audiobook has the Netflix thing on the cover, and it's the only one that does. And the Kindle version the cover of it has Netflix sticker thing on it. It's that's gross. Wild.
That is disgusting. And we should burn Netflix down.
Yeah.
Anyways, so if you want to follow the show on Twitter, you can do so at Lockwood Podcast. I used to say my Twitter here, but I've actually been a little bit more active over on Blue Sky because, you know, Twitter's kind of a cesspool. So if you have a Blue Sky, you can follow me there. The same tag name, Inferior Caitlin.
Ever my great social media, which probably should be on TikTok or something like that. But I'm so hesitant because it takes work and I'm lazy.
Yeah, no, so, we don't want to be on TikTok. We don't want that.
It would be good for the show in the sense that more people would know we exist, but...
I don't
want to do that. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We're of the same mind. We're like, who cares?
We want to make a show. We're not like making a career.
I know. That's how I think of it too. So because of that, you can find the show on Twitter or X or whatever it is at Lockwood Podcast.
I already said that, dude.
Oh, did you? Well, I'm saying it again. We got to promote the show, Caitlin, so I can make a career out of this. On Twitter. That's the key to success. If you want to reach out to us, you can send an email, though, and people have been doing that, and that's very nice of you. We love to hear from people. contact@hollowedgroundmedia.com, or you can go to the contact page at hollowedgroundmedia.com.
And remember...
Sorry.
No, that was my fault. And remember to always chuck a remember to always chuck a water bottle in the face of the boy you have a crush on.